That's Steve Torre with Rainbow People. Steve is on trombone, and he recorded this track in 2007, and it became the title track of his album that year, Rainbow People. Kenny Garrett is on alto and soprano sax. Sean Jones on trumpet and flugelhorn, Mulgrew Miller on piano, Peter Washington on bass, Ignacio Berroa, on drums, and Pedro Martinez on percussion. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and all roads today are leading to Minneapolis, where the police officer charged, former police officer charged with the killing of George Floyd on May the 20th last year, is on trial for first and second degree murder charges. And what we're going to talk about today, based on your knowledge, not particularly of the case is just starting, and there are so many restrictions. For example, the judge has decided that only one member of George Floyd's family is to be in the courtroom at a time. Very unusual, very unusual, but that's the way it is in Minneapolis right now. So what we're finding out is that the officer, the former officer, I keep saying the officer, but he's really former, has a history, it seems, of alleged brutality. But no history, no corresponding history of reprimands. So that already tells you something. We'll see how the prosecutor handles this. We'll see how that goes. But you can tell certain things from the start based on these anomalies. They'll pop up, but they'll be very significant, and you'll have to pay attention to them. The controversy that surrounded the brutal death in Minneapolis of George Floyd last year has taken a second wind as his alleged killer, former cop Derek Chauvin, this week goes on trial on first and second degree murder charges. Floyd, you may recall, died on May the 20th last year as Chauvin and three other officers attempted to arrest him, allegedly for making a purchase at a neighborhood store with counterfeit money. Chauvin, the lead cop in this case, was videotaped with his knee pressed into Floyd's neck, obstructing Floyd's ability to breathe. Lead Stories is saying that the actions of Chauvin, a trained martial artist who as a cop had several violence-related complaints filed against him but escaped reprimand, will be a focal point in this trial. And that is the hurdle that has to be overcome if Chauvin is supposed to walk away yet again from official charges. But somehow I believe that that's not going to happen in this case. I think they will round up a number of people who had personal experience of the violent kind with Chauvin and will be called to testify what their direct experience with this cop was. And that will shape, of course, in turn, the mind of the jury. But what we are going to be talking about today, you don't even have to know the specifics of the case yet. You can just get a general sense of the landscape, which we did when the event occurred, and certainly when George Floyd died. I want us to kind of take a long view here, and from what you are thinking and feeling about this case, what you think would emerge as major points of contention in this case, and whether they would lend themselves to a determination that the officer in charge, the lead officer, Derek Chauvin, did in fact dispatch George Floyd from this world by pressing on his neck and compressing on his neck and cutting off the air supply, which eventually, of course, cost his life. So that's what I want you to talk about today. We don't know the specifics of what's going on in the court. As I said, it's very tightly controlled. I don't even think they have a pool reporter, which is customary in cases like this, where the judge severely limits access even to media people, and they get one person who will be the pool reporter, and that person's reports would stand as the reports of the day, so that other news media would have some kind of access to what went on in the courtroom. But we're not talking about that today. We're talking from your own experience and your own gut feeling and your own sense of where this case not only is going, but ought to be going. What do you sense automatically that the prosecution will concentrate on, and for what reason? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. I dare suggest, I don't want to overstep my boundaries, but I don't think that police brutality cases are unfamiliar to anyone listening to this program today. We've talked a lot about such cases, and many of these cases became known internationally even because it was so heinous. So we have a sense of these kinds of cases and how they're handled. So that is really what I'm trying to get at from you today, what your initial reaction is in terms of how the prosecutors you think, it's not necessarily proven, but how you think they would approach this case in order to secure if you think they will secure a conviction. 888-874-4888. Okay. These are very difficult cases, and especially a case like this with such a high profile. There are so many places that cases like this should go, but probably won't be allowed to go, because the judge would say it is out of bounds. It doesn't relate directly to the case and therefore would disallow that kind of questioning or that kind of testimony. But let's see what you're thinking. We'll get more deeply into the case, of course, as it goes. But this is where they're starting. They're starting to establish that Derek Chauvin is not and has not been a good cop, and has had a history, a documented history, of violence, but curiously has not had a history of reprimands either. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hey, Keith, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
As far as where the prosecutors are going to take this case, you know, obviously this is just all hypothetical for right now, but and my hypothesis is that they're going to go down the wrong path. I mean, if you can see the media, we've been focusing on what, you know, how this police officer killed this man. He was leaning on his neck. I'm sorry?
Allegedly killed him.
Yes. The media has been focusing on the how. And how did he kill him? And who is Derek Chauvin? You know, he's a bad guy. He's a bad cop. He's a no good guy. Okay, we all know all this stuff. But whether he was a good guy or a bad guy, the fact of the matter is, we're talking about a $20, and like you said, allegedly, an allegedly counterfeit $20 bill. Nobody should be killed for that. Nobody should. You shouldn't have to lay hands on anybody for a $20 counterfeit dollar bill. Okay, and that's where the fact of the matter is at, and that's where nobody is taking this, and I don't think they're gonna take it, because they're gonna say that Mr. Floyd, the prosecutors are gonna, well, with the defense of Derek Chauvin, are gonna say that he was intoxicated or had drugs in the system, he was out of control, you had to restrain him, blah 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 blah. That's another whole thing about drugs and how it targets the minority community in the United States. That's just an excuse to throw people in jail.
Wouldn't an argument fall apart based on what the public was shown? And the public was not shown a belligerent, fighting man. They showed a man who had pretty much acquiesced to being arrested, who was obeying orders, and who was not trying to pose a problem at the time.
Correct.
He was actually killed.
But you got all the images that we saw, Utrees, was either him being inside of a police car, which he shouldn't have been in the first place, or being restrained on the ground, motionless, with a knee on his neck, which should definitely have been, it shouldn't even got to that point. It's what my point is, we're talking about a financial crime. People like Bernie Madoff, yeah, and that has stolen billions upon billions of dollars, have not gotten knees on their necks, Utrees, is what I'm talking about. All with today's technology of facial recognition and, you know, yada, 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 you can take a picture of somebody and send them a citation in the mail and thank you, have a nice day. There's no reason why police officers have to touch you physically in order to send you a ticket or send you a citation, whatever the case may be, for you to show up in court and do what you have to do. The fact of the matter is, they're going to focus.
There wasn't just one. There were four officers.
Yeah, exactly. For a $20 counterfeit bill, is my point. And they could talk about how evil this cop, this one cop, now mind you, they're trying to narrow it down to one. They're trying to throw the one guy under the bus, when in fact it's the whole system that is guilty of what happened there. It's not Derek Chauvin. See, they're going to use him as the fall guy as to how they can continue to do what they do, just as long as they get away with it. But with this one guy, maybe we can throw him under the bus. You look, you know, everybody look at this little shiny object over here, and while we continue to do what we do. And that's the problem we're going to go down this road where he might go to jail, you know, manslaughter, something like that. Who knows what? But the fact of the matter is, he's going to get away with, or the system is going to get away with what they did at the end of the day.
That's your prediction?
That's how it's been always. We've never gotten any structural change as to how we police in the United States, okay? With how many people would that have mental illness or addicted to drugs, and they continue to treat people as a criminal rather than a patient or a someone that's in crying out for help or that's in need. They treat you more as a criminal than a person that is in need. And that's the problem.
Let's put you in the place of the prosecutor here. Let's say you were prosecuting this case. What would be your angle? What would you be telling the jury as what is going to be your approach to win them over to believe that Chauvin was a bad guy?
Basically, like what I said in the beginning, he should have just been handed over a ticket. Here's your ticket. You show up in court. You plead your case to the judge. I don't want to hear it. Here's your ticket. If the police officer is going to do the bidding of the system as it is, he could have been easily given a ticket. And that's it. Why do you have to lock somebody up forcefully for a $20 counterfeit dollar bill, allegedly?
Because that's the law. It's counterfeit or passing counterfeit money is against the law. It happens to be a pretty serious offense. $20, you and I would say, it's no big deal. But there were mitigating circumstances even so. He went to make a purchase. He patronized this store. I'm getting all kinds of beeps going on here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he had been to that store. They knew him, in fact.
Yes.
Personally, they had a relationship with him as a customer. And this, just the same, is a pretty serious crime. And
I understand
they are, after all, police officers.
I understand that counterfeiting money is a serious crime. But you trees, we're talking about one $20 bill. As if no one in the world.
Different. $120 bill that they caught him with might have led to a raid on his house where they might have found a whole bunch of counterfeit bills.
Okay, but can we get to that point? You see what I'm saying, Utrecht? They jumped the gun.
Yes.
No pun intended, but they jumped the gun and they conduct the raid, they conduct the trial and everything all in one shot. Okay, see, that's what I'm talking about, Utrecht. I one time went to a Chinese restaurant to purchase food, and I whipped out some cash, and the guy goes wham with like a little pen and shows me that I have a $10 counterfeit bill, me not knowing that that was a $10. I was paying for food, and I didn't know that I had a $10 counterfeit bill, Utrecht. Okay?
Yes.
Should I have been killed that day?
No, it's not about you should be killed. The question was,
there you go.
Did you knowingly have, or did you knowingly pay for your food with a counterfeit bill? Where
did
it come from?
I'm
talking from the point of view of law enforcement. This is where they will go with a case like this. It has happened before I found a stack of bills that I had, and one of them looked a little funny, and it was funny money, it turned out to be. But, you know, I just accepted it because I got it from someplace else. And I just saved it. I set it aside. But I didn't make a big deal about it because, for one thing, you know, how do you rectify something like that? You have no way of proving it came from here or this person gave it to me. You have no way of doing
it. Exactly. Exactly. So, he had no idea. But you, what my point is, if he was conducting a counterfeiting ring or printing cash, and it was a something that was, okay, we gave him a ticket one time for it, and then he continues to do it, now you create an investigation, you get a warrant for his, search warrant for the home, and then you go into that. And then I'm pretty sure there's, like, federal agencies that dedicate their time to this type of stuff. But, I mean, arguing with the man on the street over a $20 counterfeit bill, I think they went extremely overboard.
Yes, they certainly did, because he died. No question.
And
thanks for getting us started today.
Okay.
Go ahead. Finish up.
I just wanted to say that just as you came across the counterfeit dollar bills, I came across the counterfeit money and didn't realize it. Maybe George Floyd as well. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that maybe he didn't know he was trying to purchase something with a counterfeit bill.
All right.
And he should not have been killed for that.
Thank you for getting us started today. Positive from Brooklyn. You're on the air.
How you doing, Latrice Lee? I met you a long time ago at the Restoration Center back in the days. You probably don't remember that.
Okay.
At any rate, what I want to say is that just having a counterfeit bill doesn't make it a crime. You have to know.
We're not discussing this. What we're discussing is, what do you think the angle will be when, as the prosecutor presents the case, the case is just now being presented. What would the prosecutor set up as an argument against a cop, ex-cop?
Right. Well, naturally, it would have to be extreme force. And also that the officer, there was no way shown that the officer's life was in jeopardy to justify the type of force that he used at that particular time. So that would be the main thing. But more going into it, the very fact that he had a history of doing things of this nature and was not reprimanded showed the culture or the system of the police force in which he occupied at that particular time. He was really one that, of anything.
If you were standing in to kind of represent the family's interest, that's the point you will make, that this history he had is important and cannot be severed from the case.
Exactly.
Okay. How do you think it will work in this case, which just opened up on Monday?
Well, I don't know all that the defendant lawyers have in their defense of the cops' actions. I don't know all that they have. So with that in mind, I would have to say that I would say that based upon how it's being put across to the media, they're going to come across in a way that to justify his actions based upon how he, as a cop, assumed George Floyd would be a threat to him, and that's why he used the restraints in which he used. And also, I have to question the mere fact of why the store actually called the police. Because normally when someone has a counterfeit bill, just one bill, they usually just hold on to it or give it back. they normally don't call the police. So why was the police called in the first place? And then you also said that they had a history with this with George Floyd. So that's also questionable.
Supposedly patronized this store quite regularly, and they knew him.
Right.
And that is why, in fact, it was said that the person who was running the store at the time called the boss because they recognized that, you know, he was a regular customer and was looking for direction from the boss as to what to do.
Wow. Usually regular customers, they get treated better than unregular customers or strangers. So that's, I mean, I didn't hear nobody say that he was a regular customer that had a history of using counterfeit bills or something of that nature. It's just that he's a regular customer. Still, that wouldn't warrant to me for them to call the police or call a supervisor on what to do. You know, it's kind of strange.
Very much so. I'm interested in how the case is forming itself in your head. The theories that you expect the prosecutor to float, what do you expect the defense to say? We're trying to get that part of it done. What do you expect the defense will offer?
Well, they can't use too much of the history of George Floyd as far as arrests of doing anything of this nature, especially being connected with counterfeiting, let alone having a history of being violent towards police, or I haven't heard anything of having any connections with the store of this nature. So I would think more so they're going to rally on the officers, actions as a cop all the years he's been a cop and things of that nature. They would bring witnesses in to corroborate his good standing as an officer. That's what I would think, based upon what we have here.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how close to the mark you got. But thank you so much for contributing today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ed from Queens, you're on the air at 888-874-4888.
Good afternoon, Utrice. How you doing?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm hanging in.
You sound like me. pertaining to the case, I mean, taking a prosecutor's standpoint, I would have to point out the officer's record. I mean, the fact that the crime really is not relevant. It's the behavior of the officer pertaining to his apprehension of the suspect, how he put the suspect in physical danger, how he ignored the pleas from the suspect for relief, I can't breathe, how he reacted, how he drove his knee into the back of the man, how he caused his death through asphyxiation. The record would be brought into play, but there's a problem with that because there's no real conviction for brutality, even though he has a history. So that might be hard to bring that into evidence because there is no formal charges. But the prosecutor will basically have to control the narrative. He'll have to demonstrate that there wasn't really a threat. He'll have to demonstrate this officer acted with depraved indifference to human life. If he can get that far, I mean, I would go for manslaughter because murder implies intent, even though I've heard rumors that George Floyd and this officer had prior dealings as far as George Floyd and him working as bouncers at a local nightclub. I'm not sure where you can go with that. As far as tying that in, as far as they had a prior relationship, and there might have been some animus there. But, I mean, your best bet with a cop is to go for manslaughter or depraved indifference to human life based on his actions and try to bring in his disciplinary record in the forefront. As far as the defense, they're gonna blame the victim. They're gonna bring up any type of flaws that George Floyd has had in his past. They're gonna bring up anything as far as that can cast aspersions on him. Like I said, the counterfeit bill, I think that's pretty much irrelevant. Everybody gets a counterfeit bill. There's several printers, there's several devices where people can make very good counterfeit bills and pass them off in a pile. I myself, like your other listener said, have got from time to time got caught with a bogus bill. But it's the action of the officer and playing on the fact, the outrage that was generated by that by the video and the protest around it. It's a slippery slope, though, because you don't want to. There's questions of jury voir dire. There's questions, can I get a fair trial in this jurisdiction? So you got to look at all those things when you're a prosecutor. And you got to remember, DA, prosecutor, and cops, they have an incestuous relationship. I always want an independent prosecutor. I don't want a DA, because a DA is nothing but a cop with a law degree. And the DA can control the narrative. And once you can't control the narrative of a case, you can paint a picture. That's where the old saying goes. A DA can indict a ham sandwich because the DA controls the narrative. And if you can control the narrative skillfully, you can get somebody off or on, depending upon the evidence and how you present it.
So why did you not mention the other three cops? What purpose will they serve in this case?
Well, I don't think you're going to bring them into bear because that would be too much. The other three cops, their lack of action, I would take that up on a separate case. I wouldn't tie that in with this case if you want to get a clean conviction, because then you start to talk about procedural issues. Then you start to talk about departmental issues, and that can open up a can of worms. You want to get a clear conviction on the man that did the crime first, then we'll go after departmental issue as far as what is the response to apprehending a suspect, how a brother officer is supposed to how other officers supposed to act in a crisis situation. Those things you don't want to bring into this because you want to get a clear conviction on the man who committed the crime. It's my opinion. I concentrate on that first.
But they were witnesses as well.
Yes, there you can bring them in as witnesses against this officer to say, why didn't you perform? How could you stand there and watch this happen? Were you aware of what was going on? You can bring them in as witnesses to indict the officer who committed the crime, but to try and lump it all in, it would get too confusing. It would cause logistic problems. It would cause problems of evidence. It would open up a can of worms that you really don't want to open. You want to get this guy and get him out. And then concentrate on the procedural errors and the actual department posture as it is towards the people of the state. You want to get the man who convicted the crime first.
Well, you made some very good points. Thanks a lot. See what happens when you just take it easy and you let your brain do its work. It does its work. Thanks for calling in and contributing. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Idris. How are you doing today?
I'm okay. How about you?
Well, hanging in just like everybody else, hanging by myself.
That's what I say all the time. I'm just hanging in.
Yes,
so,
yes.
What are your thoughts as this case opens up in terms of your projection? I mean, I know we don't have access to what's going on in the courtroom, but what do you think is going to happen here?
Okay. The first thing, I have a question for you. Have anyone have presented the counterfeited $20 bill? That is one question.
I haven't seen it. I haven't heard anything about it.
That's one thing that I always had bothered me, that they haven't really presented. And if they knew it was counterfeited, if they knew it was fake, that store where he used. Because most of the time when you go to the store, and if they have a machine, they put it through the machine, and they tell you right then and right then. So I'm wondering how fast they knew that it was a counterfeit $20 bill. And if he was a regular customer, don't you have the decency to tell the person right away and right there, yes, it's a counterfeit money that you're presenting to us? And that's what I'm wondering, if they have that $20 bill as evidence, because I haven't ever heard them presented the $20 bill. So that is one thing. And what do I think about this, the whole thing, and how it's going to turn out? You said, I think it was you, but I know today you mentioned that only one family member is allowed in the courtroom, okay? And yes. Then yesterday, I think it was yesterday or the day before, you were talking about the influencer, the people that they hire. And because, of course, you know, people of color, you know, Black, Latino, I'm not sure if you would include Asian people, but, you know, Native American, we're so dumb that we really don't, when we see something, we really don't know what we're seeing. So they have to influence us about what is happening in the courtroom. So right now, they are doing something to control the narrative of what is going to transpire there. That's one thing. Another thing that I have to tell you, about four years ago, I went to Bolivia. And I will tell you, this case is an international case. International. This has gone all over the world. And everyone has seen this video. I went to Bolivia. And at that time, Evo Morales was in power. And I tell you, I saw an article about what was happening in this country with the cops killing people of color, especially Black. I was so shocked that I actually brought the newspaper, even though it was in Spanish, to show it to one of the groups that I belong to. So this case, he has to be found guilty. I'm not sure about first-degree murder, but manslaughter, something. This is international.
No, they have two charges against him, first and second degree murder.
One of the two, but I think it could be second degree. I don't know how many years, but this is international. This is going to be something that around the world, they have been talking about this case, and if these people, they don't find it guilty, it's going to be a problem. And I think people in all over United States going to come out on the street. Because it wasn't not only that but it's the first time that we saw somebody being killed. I mean, they have been killing us, but the way that he was killed, it was so obvious that the man was losing his air. He couldn't get air. He couldn't breathe. And about those other cops that you mentioned, I do have to say this. Do you know how many people are in jail, especially Black and brown people, because they have been the lookout? They looked out when people commit a crime. So they are as guilty as him because they helped him. And they knew they were helping him because one cop said he needs air or something like that. So, and my last thing that I have to say, my father-in-law was, he used to work for one of the big banks here, and he was in the fraud division with counterfeit, especially American Express. And you know what? They had to investigate these big people that they were counterfeiting, and they actually made the money, counterfeiting the money. And you know what? You need to investigate before you even charge these people with a crime. So how can you charge and kill somebody in a crime where you haven't even been proven that you're guilty in front of the world? So, yes, I think this time something's going to happen. Maybe one of them, but he was the one who killed him. Even when the other one, they were looked out, and they were just looking, especially that Asian, I forgot his name. He was just looking and not letting anyone see anything or even get close to what that man was doing. He's as guilty as the man who killed him. But that's my prediction. A lot of people don't think that they're going to be found guilty. They know what is coming if this guy is not, if they don't find him guilty of one of those two charges. and let you all see right. who they pick. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in and contributing today. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
All right. I like Ali's question. That it was very good. What confuses me is, was the transaction concluded with the person in the store for this $20 bill? And have they, did they get the $20 bill? And was it really a counterfeit bill or not? I don't know any, have any information whether this was or not a $20 bill. And why, if the store clerk was presented with a counterfeit bill, why would that person complete a transaction with someone who presented a counterfeit bill? That's the question. That's one part of it. Now, to getting to your question about the trial, I would say that there's an incestuous relationship between the district attorney's office and the police department. So in this case, I don't think it's any different. And that means that being this is a worldwide trial where everyone in every continent will be looking at this, the district attorney is going to have to do what he can to, I don't think in this case, throw the trial, but he's going to have to do what he can to make the pain as easily, make pain for the police officer as light as he can. But I don't think that the district attorney is going to throw this case in favor of the perpetrator of this crime. I think that what he would do was indicate that in the training and procedures that are given to the police, this was an unorthodox way of restraining arrested person. And, he could stand on that. That's not a routine way of restraining someone who's under arrest. So that is what he can do. And I think he knows they have to give this guy up. They're going to have to throw him to the guilty side. So, but the district attorney will make it as soft as possible. Now, on the other side, the family side, they will do a number of things. I'm certain they're going to get a big monetary settlement for this crime. I would make certain that the history of this person is well known. But I don't think in any way the district attorney is going to let this guy get away. Now, I don't know if this is a jury trial or not, or a bench trial. I'm not sure about that. But if it was a jury trial, you might have some rogue juror who would let him get a pass. So that's the way I look at it.
All right. Thank you. This is quite, by the way, quite an education just listening to people's analysis. I really am enjoying it. Walter from Virginia, you're on the air at 888-874-4888.
Yes, hello, Eutrice. How are you?
Okay, thank you, Walter. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Very, very insightful comments on all the callers today. I personally believe that Officer Chauvin, former Officer Chauvin, will be acquitted. I believe that the preparations that the city of Minneapolis is taking and the money that they're spending is basically in preparation for that verdict. It will be a jury trial. The jury gets seated starting March the 8th. They believe that the trial will probably go until either end of March or mid-April. I do believe they'll try to stretch this out as far as possible, but I think when you look at the jurisprudence or the preponderance of the evidence, the only verdict that really would stand is that he would be acquitted. When you look at all the films, the footage from surveillance cameras, the body cams of the police officers, as well as the bystanders, you can make the case that the officers acted in accordance to their training and that they did not do anything untoward to George Floyd. George Floyd actually requested to be put on the ground per the video from the body cams because he was claustrophobic and did not want to go into the back of the squad car. When they tried to put him in several times, they offered to roll down the windows, turn on the air conditioning to try to make him be more comfortable in the back of the car, but he would not go in the back of the car. One of the things that really stands out is the toxicology report, where he had over three times the lethal limit of fentanyl in his system. The prosecutors held on to that report when it was actually came out in June. They didn't release it until October of 2020. So when you look at all of the evidence in the jury, I think it's definitely going to go, even though it's not going to map with public opinion, that he will be acquitted.
So where in the training manual does it say that in order to subdue a subject, you can put your knee in his neck and cut off his oxygen supply?
Well, actually, it does not say that in the training manual. However, there are training videos that go with the courses for the Minneapolis police officer. And I think the most recent video was within a year to a year and a half of the training that they underwent. When you look at former Officer Chauvin's knee, okay, that was placed actually between the crevice of his shoulder and the lower part of his jawbone, he actually was not blocking his airway. Had he blocked his airway, George Floyd would not even been able to speak. Now, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have put him up and maybe accommodated him off of the ground. I'm not saying that. But when you look at all of the videos from three different sources, George Floyd was in excited delirium, and he kept repeating, even when he was standing vertically going into the police car with nobody restraining any of his body parts except they were holding him in the back trying to get him in the car, that he said he couldn't breathe. In fact, he repeated that several times while he was standing up trying to get into the car that he couldn't breathe because he was claustrophobic and was scared to go in the back of a police car. So they then, after trying to get him in the police car, he said, lay me down, lay me down, lay me down. He requested to be laid down. So then when former officer Chauvin put the knee on him, you could actually see as George Floyd was moving and breathing that the knee was actually rising, okay, with his movement, so that it wasn't actually placed on his throat. It was actually placed between his shoulder and his lower jawbone.
Well, the medical examiner, Michael Bodden, had an entirely different analysis of that. And he compounded it. He said it wasn't just that the knee was placed on George Floyd's neck and cut off the oxygen supply, but that the other officers pressed his chest down through by pressing down on his back. It also compressed the chest, and the chest could not expand in order to inhale.
Absolutely. And again, I'm not saying that the officer's restraints did not contribute to his cause of death. I'm talking about predominantly the knee on the neck, which is what Officer Chauvin's on. And yeah, one of the officers that actually said, hey, do you think we should, you know, take him off or roll him on his side or let him up? And Chauvin said no. And in my view, he should have said yes, okay? Because at that point, they could see that he was deteriorating. In fact, they made two separate calls for medical assistance. The first call was a code 2, because George Floyd had bumped his head trying to get into the police car when they were trying to get him in the police car, and it injured his head. And so then when they saw that he was deteriorating on the ground, they made another call for code 3, which was a higher priority call. So again, did the officer's restraint on the ground contribute to him dying? Yes. I don't think there's any question of that. But was it the sole cause of death? I don't think so.
Would it cause you grave concern if the medical examiner's report is not discussed in this trial?
Absolutely. Yes. Because you have to weigh all the evidence.
I think so too. Well, you raised some very good points, and I thank you for thinking so deeply about them. Thank you so much. Asher from New York, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay. How's by you?
Life is good. Life is good. It's funny. I remember you when you were saying that when the city of Minneapolis was hiring these influencers to try to change the narrative or the discord of the case. I am pretty positive we just talked to one.
Why would you say that?
Because his entire, everybody's entitled to their point of view, but his entire conversation was, well, it wasn't really that. It was more of this. And yeah, his knee was not actually on his neck, but on between his neck and his upper shoulder blades. And it just seemed to be everything was designed, everything he said was designed to take the blame off of the officer. And this was more of a cooperation between George Floyd and the officer. And it just so happened that Floyd died and the officer didn't.
Well, I didn't get that. I thought that he gave, from his perspective, and that's what the issue is, because we are technically being jurors here. We're weighing evidence or weighing what we see and hear in the way of evidence, and we're coming to our own conclusions. We'll see how it ends up in a court of law as the prosecutor supposedly proceeds with this case. We'll see what he brings before the jury. But I didn't get the sense that he was an influencer or trying to be an influencer.
Maybe I say that more tongue-in-cheek, but it seemed that he, like, neglected to mention that Officer Chauvin had his knee on George Floyd's neck for, what was it, almost 9 minutes?
Yes, and 8 minutes and some seconds.
And at the same time, like you mentioned, there was another officer on his chest cavity preventing him, Mr. Floyd, from taking a breath. And let me just make this one point. It seems that in any other situation where a crime took place or incident that resulted in a homicide, I won't use the word murder, I'll say homicide, wouldn't everybody involved be charged and it will be up for the court to sort it out, as opposed to, well, this guy was on his neck, so we'll ignore the guy that was on his chest. We'll ignore the guy who was blocking the onlookers from trying to assist Mr. Floyd, and we'll ignore the other officer who was sitting on his legs. We'll just ignore all of those.
We haven't seen yet what the lineup is of witnesses to be called and what they will have to say, but you make a very good point. The point is that four officers were involved.
Exactly.
In the arrest of George Floyd, which resulted in his death. So are we going to see four different cops testifying? I don't know. But it would seem to be a rational decision.
Exactly. But there's only Officer Chauvin is the only one that's being charged right now.
Well, yeah, like you say, right now, that's it. We don't know what's next.
Okay.
We have no idea where this case is going yet. And what the theory is that the prosecutor is intending to present. But Asher, we're out of time. Thank you so much for calling. Thank you all for calling and submitting your thoughts for public inspection the way you normally do. Thank you so much. Very brave of you to do that. And I'm honored that you feel safe enough to do that on this program. Let's get together again tomorrow and do some more talking. Bye-bye.